Sex Positive Talk, where shame ends and nothing is off limits. Brought to you by Advocating for Sex Positive Education and Consent Culture, EmpoweredHearts.com, and GTFORadio.ca. I'm your host, Angel, queer femby, sexuality educator, and sex coach. So Shannon, welcome back, everybody. This is Sex Talk. We're here to continue this conversation. If you didn't listen last week, you're going to want to pause here and go back and listen. Shannon introduced us with a very thorough introduction, so thank you for that, to the concept of being present and how we can tie that presence into just a profound experience with another person. And we're relating this to kink, but I know there's a lot of other activities that people can engage in. You've talked about yoga and that kind of stuff. And we're just going to continue on the conversation. So welcome back.
Awesome. Hello again, everybody. Right. So we left off our last conversation talking about what are the actual practical steps you can take to build this capacity for presence and to bring it into our kink lives and beyond. Oh, I am so glad you asked.
Yay!
So, okay. The very first thing that would be like saturated in somatic experiencing is to slow it down. When I started my somatic experiencing training, I was so frustrated because our instructor, she would speak like this. Leave lots of space after every word she says. And anytime it's something more profound, there's a bigger silence. And I would always show up, you know, caffeinated and ready to go and so ready to learn, like turbo learn, not just sit there and luxuriate in this conversation. And it took me so long to overcome just the aggravation with the slow pace. And over time, I learned that it served a purpose because our minds can fly a mile a minute. And they do, especially considering how prevalent stimulants are in society, starting with caffeine. And I have actually since quit caffeine, which has been a ridiculous journey that we can get into on a different conversation. But our minds are constantly in just this rush, but our bodies are ancient animals and they have their own pace. And if you take it as truth that presence is when your mind and your body are in the same place, then slowing it down really allows for you to hear your body. And we started talking about boundaries and kind of peeking in and out of this conversation about how do you assert yourself? Well, first of all, you need to feel yourself. You need to sense yourself. You need to remain tethered to your body. And the way you do that is by slowing down to its rhythm, to its level. And that doesn't mean you always have to stay here. So for anyone who's enjoying, you know, like rough, fast sex and enjoys the intensity of it and all of that, you can still have that. But in order for you to develop this like steady anchor in your body, you first have to learn how to hear it. So pull it back a bit, slow it down until you can hear and feel all these little signs that your body is constantly sending you. And it will be that much easier for you to then go into all of these rich, fast, intense experiences because you will remain tethered. And there's actually so much more to be gained as well. So slow isn't actually the opposite of intense, because you can have a slow experience that's so, so rich. Because if you consider like the vastness of the ocean, you know, and there's a lot of water, and just the sheer volume of water is intensity, just like the surface area of it is intensity. And that looks beautiful and it's impressive. It's great to see from space when you're flying over an ocean. But if you were to be on that shore and to just peek in, and to see, you know, like all the life in there, all the rocks and all of the plants and the teeny tiny fishies and, you know, sea urchins and whatever. Like if you just take a moment to really like gaze into the depth of it, it's just so much richer. And you might find that as impressive as this whole surface area of the ocean is in like this 1 square meter of space right by the shore, that might be a much richer experience because there's more to it. There's more layers, there's more dimension to it, you know? And so if you have, like, if you hear me talking about getting slow and you have this aversion, first of all, I hear you. It took me months to overcome it. Yeah. But second of all,
and if you're someone who's experienced like a ton of trauma, it can take years. So like, be patient with yourself and just keep remembering that connecting with your body is sometimes scary, but it is so rewarding.
Yeah. And it's especially if you have been through a lot of trauma, because a lot of the time when we're stuck in circumstances that don't allow us to escape, so that's how we end up with trauma, is when the cycle of threat and resolution doesn't get completed. And over time that gets compounded, and here you are now you're traumatized. Like, you have trauma that continues to fuck with your life. And especially if you've been through that, your body will continuously give you cues and signs of discomfort. It'll be like, hey, we've been mistreated in this way, or hey, I'm finding this threatening and that threatening. And we spend so much time dissociating from the body's cues because we've already gone through the trauma. We already fucking did that and it sucked and we don't want to do it again. So remaining in touch with our body makes us feel like we're still in the battleground of the trauma, like we're still in the crime scene. And that can be, it can carry, that can feel really heavy. And it's not surprising that we wouldn't want to be there. However, the doorway to pleasure is still through embodiment. The doorway to healing is still through embodiment. And what I found, like in various types of therapy that I've received as a client or a patient, is that a lot of these things are actually not as big to feel if you give them space. Like, you might have like a sob fest for an hour, three, five, but there's this feeling that if I let myself feel, I'm gonna be there forever. I will never come out. It's this quicksand where I'm gonna get pulled down and I'm gonna be enveloped and nobody's gonna find me. Nobody's gonna come and get me and I'm just gonna be there buried. And trust me, you won't. The word emotion comes from Latin, I think, emovere, which literally means to move out. Not just to move, but to move out. When you experience something and you say, oh, I'm not going to let that affect me, the fact that you said that means you're already affected. You didn't block its way in, you actually blocked its way out. So the only way through your emotion is through it. And I remember seeing this meme. It was like this little stick person hanging onto a branch of the tree, and they look visibly scared. And the caption is, let go. The ground is not as far as you think. And the second caption, the second like picture of the same meme is that the person was actually just like a foot above the ground. And yes, trauma can be earth-shattering and huge and immense. And you are so much bigger than that. You just are. And constantly neglecting your body is actually what keeps you in that experience longer than you need to be. And little by little, just feel it. Let it through, let it out. And if you can, pick someone that can hold space for it, because we're built for processing and connection.
And sometimes holding space means just being there. But I think people misunderstand holding space as being able to fix what's going on. And that's not, you know, there's nothing to fix. You just need mm-hmm. another human to bear witness, basically, and
exactly
be there for you.
Yeah. And you emoting is enough of an experience in an interaction. Like, you don't have to like even come to it with like the guilt of, oh, but I'm going to be really sad and I'm probably going to cry a lot and I'm going to be a bummer. And, you know, I'm going to have to like kind of check in with you and see if it's still okay for me to keep crying and all of this. Like, no, you can just have a person be there for you while you fall apart. I've shown up at my bestie's door and just sobbed on her kitchen floor for 5 hours and she would just sit next to me and just pet me. And there was, you know, I think it's often really hard for us to give ourselves permission to feel when we're alone, because there's also that worry that I'm going to disappear into the quicksand and there's no one around me to pull me out. So this other person can literally just be there. So you know that if you get into your quicksand, somebody's hand is going to be there for you to grab. And that's it. And that's enough. That's enough. Like, it's okay. I used to teach children English when I lived in Europe. And we would often talk about this thing where, like, you know, all the kids are really fine. Like, they're fine. They're playing and they're doing a thing. But then as soon as their parents shows up, they fall apart. Like, they're playful and fun and whatever. But then their parents shows up and they start sobbing and acting out. And at first, I really didn't understand that. But later, I came across some information that it's actually safety. You know, even kids go through their day and they're kind of like putting on a bit of a show and acting a human, if you will, and they're trying to like be in the world. And then all of a sudden their safe base comes around and they're free to let go. And they can actually like emote and they can fall apart, and all the frustration and all the, you know, incongruencies of the day can really hit them. And they know they're in a safe environment to let it.
It's one of the reasons why it's so hard to reconcile the school experience or the home experience when you're trying to get a child diagnosed with autism or ADD. Their meltdowns happen at home more often than at school.
Yeah. And to even think that, you know, these tantrums, here they are being this like experience of safety in the child's bodies, and how often the parents will actually shut it down. Like, you're being embarrassing, you know, this isn't the time for it. Don't do that. Shut up. Be quiet. And we learn to shelter ourselves even from safety at that point. Because then you go, you know, when I feel safe enough to be vulnerable, that's shameful. That's guiltful. That means I'm a piece of shit. So I will never do that again. And as adults, we kind of have to reframe a lot of these pieces of ideology we've picked up from our parents and our cultures and our friends and the people we've dated, and recognize that a lot of them were just passively received and never really actively sorted and decided whether or not you want to keep them. And so as an adult, you get the pleasure of being like, oh, actually, that's not what that means. When I'm with a person I care about and who cares about me, me falling apart is actually this incredible gift of real intimacy. Because I know if I'm carrying a big emotional weight in my heart and I'm showing up to a coffee date with my bestie, if I don't get this weight out, I'm not going to be present with her. Because everything else I might be saying would be just to avoid this weight, or it will be kind of the surface level interaction, because anything deeper than that feels too threatening. So in fact, showing up to my bestie's house and just unwinding all of what's pent up clears the way for us to have a real interaction. So there's, in the aftermath, more space for her to be real with me, because I now have capacity. I'm not jammed up and clogged up with this big thing that needed to get out. Now I can receive more of both me and her and the context that we're in. So all of that to say, slow it down so you can feel you. You can feel you, you know, instead of whizzing past. There was this other webinar that I attended, and it was meant for embodiment. And so what really surprised me is that a part of the workshop, and this was online, so not in person, she had us, Blair Lindsay, she had us just touch our own hand, like gently, our own arm, like maybe like run your fingers up your arm, like from your shoulder to your wrist, but in a way that felt pleasurable and sensual and, you know, like real caring touch. And I actually started sobbing doing that, because I realized that at that time where I was in my life, I had started to perceive sensual touch as threatening, because I didn't have a lot of sexual energy available in me. And so when somebody would like touch me in a way that's, like soft, I would perceive that as an invitation. And worse than that, I would perceive that as a threat. I would perceive that as pressure to then, you know, escalate. And I would feel like I'm getting to the top of this roller coaster where soon it's all going to move too fast and I'm not going to want any of it and I'm not going to be able to say no. And all of this anxiety started coming up when I was touching my own arm in my kitchen watching a webinar, you know? And these are the cues we miss when we're going too fast, because that was so profound for me. Because if I'm touching myself and I'm feeling this way, how can I possibly show up to an interaction with another person where I might even invite them to touch me, but my body has this reaction? And then I'm going to spend the whole time trying to renegotiate it in my brain and be like, shut up, Shannon, don't be threatened by this. This is a person you love. This is a person you care about. And, you know, they should be able to touch you. And you actually owe it to them because, you know, you're in a relationship and it's been a while. You haven't actually slept with them in a while. And all of the shit that continues going on through your mind, and you have to renegotiate all of that. Why do it then if you can do it now with yourself, by yourself, and recalibrate and teach your body, you know, when I touch myself this way, I am seeing this as a threat, but hey, body, look, I'm safe. Everything around me is safe. And you might even like
to go any further if I don't want to.
Yes.
This touch can be here just for this.
Exactly. And is there a different kind of touch you prefer? Maybe the arm feels too much, but how about a foot rub? Or maybe, you know, maybe I'll just rub my face to really like feel all the anxiety that's coming up in my identity. And maybe that can be more comforting than a touch on the arm. And you can kind of have this bit of conversation with yourself. Something that's really been helpful for me is imagining my body, like my visceral self, as the child me, because that's when it really solidified. Like my body has just been with me since day one. And it has taken on all of the experiences that I've ever had, and it has logged them all. And a lot of these ideas and perceptions have been ingrained and imprinted when I was little. And so when I kind of like do these things with my body where there's a bit of resistance and my mind wants to be frustrated, my mind wants to be like, we're a grown-ass woman, we're 30 years old, I should be able just to choose to receive this experience and not have to negotiate with myself about it. And it's very frustrating. But then I remember that this is, you know, like a cowering child who's being pushed into an experience that, you know, previously might not have been really comfortable. And I'm not just going to throw them in there. Like, trial by fire is not loving, it's not caring, it's not nourishing. And opening up that conversation a bit more and being like, okay, well, what do you need? Is it a glass of water first? Is it maybe, you know, like turning the lights down a bit so I don't feel so exposed? And ultimately, I recognize how daunting all of this might sound, because it sounds like there's so much work to be done, as it were. However, recognize that your one relationship that's consistent is you and your body. You can't do anything in the world without being in your body. And so all of this work is so worth it, because then you build this better relationship, and not only will all of your other experiences be richer and fuller and more present, but you also get a teammate. Like, you don't actually have to question yourself going forward. How many times have all of us been in an interaction where we're like, I'm feeling this, but I don't know if that's right. Or, you know, like, this person is saying this, but I kind of feel like they're dodgy. And, you know, sometimes, and it's crazy too. I feel like at this point, even receiving messages on FetLife, sometimes I get this vibe, and twice it happened that like the conversation is fine and what they're saying is fine, the way they look is fine. And I'm like, what is this resistance? Like, I just kind of feel like something is a bit off, and my mind can't place it. And in both instances, these men were dating in secret from their partners. And then I was like, ah, that's that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you develop this relationship with your body, it will always inform you in every context of your boundaries. So this is why it's really important, because then you have this non-negotiable anchor in what's true. And it won't matter how much your brain wants to negotiate around it. It won't matter, because then you'll be so much more vividly aware that my body says no, hey, you look cute and I enjoy your company and this would have been fun. My mind would have really loved this, but my body says no, and that's non-negotiable.
And really, it's about learning to listen to your body and trust what it's telling you. And I think,
yes,
I think we spend a lot of time being told that we're wrong when we listen to our body. So we can recap.
Yeah.
Man, I love your brain. I just love your brain. You really do. So slow down, get used to the messages your body is sending, and listen to what your body is saying, and recognize it as truth.
Exactly. And maybe also learn that there's kind of this like vertical intensity where, like, you know, getting paddled or flogged or whatever, like there's this vertical intensity, but there's also horizontal intensity of like how present you actually are. How rich does this experience here feel? Instead of like, you know, turning up the dial on how hard you're being spanked, you can turn up the dial of how much of you is receiving the spanking? Is it just your ass? Or do you actually like feel it like in your solar plexus? Do you feel it like as a ringing in your ears or like as a warmth spreading down your legs? Or just how much of you is present right here in like breadth rather than, you know, this vertical intensity, if that makes sense?
We need to find a way to measure this like scientifically, because I've been trying to explain subspace to people, and I always get the argument there's top space too, and there is, but top space doesn't include the physical sensations. It's mirroring, it's almost hypnotic because you're so focused on your person and how they're reacting, and you're trying to respond in a way that helps them build in these waves so that they can expand horizontally, to steal your phrasing. I love that. But it's not the same as the person who's also receiving the sensations. Like, they're different experiences.
Yeah, and of course,
the way you've just explained it is just so beautiful. If we could measure this, I think we would, oh, I'm just so excited. I just have all these ideas now for actual research. We need to get in touch with somebody who's a neurologist and wants to do some fun research.
Let's do it. But there's also, like, with enough invitation to develop our internal awareness, you can also use self-reporting. Because, for example, when I used to teach yoga, a way that I would start my classes often would be like, if you were to imagine the outline of your skin, like the container of your body, as kind of like a battery almost, like, how much of you is really here? Like, is it 30% of you and the rest of you is in the past or the present or the future, sorry, or in the conversation you had with your boss or your friend or something you're about to do, what you're going to get? Is it at 40%? You know, are you barely here? Are you like at 3%? And the reason why we do this isn't to like shame you right off the bat or anything, but inherently asking that question makes you more present, because then you have to, first of all, sense your body, and then you have to sense how much of you is within your body. And, you know, at the beginning, you'll name whatever, like either you're at 5% or 60% or whatever. But just the act of doing that and then sensing your body in space and then taking some deep breaths and knowing that wherever you are, it's fine. Paradoxically, that process itself grows how much of you is here. Because then we would spend, say, like a few breaths, you know, like now, how much of you do you think is in the past? And with every inhale, can you try and bring those parts of you back into your body? And because you have this visual of kind of like a battery being filled up, there's actually like space for that energy to come in and for you to viscerally feel it, knowing that whatever you were worried about in the past or the future remains there after your practice. Like, once you walk out of the yoga room, you can still continue all of those worries if you want to. But just for this 1 hour, you know, like, let's be here. Because the more here you are, the more you get out of this class. Like, I don't want to teach a whole class to, like, people who are 3% here. I mean, I do. I still would. And I still would love you.
You don't get that flow.
Yeah.
Right? Like, for somebody not mystical, you don't get that energy exchange, you know?
Yeah.
And that feeds us, that nourishes us in a way that nothing else does.
Totally. And you are going to be here for an hour with me anyway, no matter what, whether there's 1% of you or 100% of you. But if there's more of you here, you get more benefit. That's just true. So as long as you're going to be investing the energy, why not make sure it's really vibrant and here for you? Okay.
I noticed you do this constantly throughout, and I've started doing it when you do it. Like, it just becomes a mirror response. And I just want to speak to that, because whenever I start these interviews, my head's filled with all the technical stuff, right? Like, I've got to decide whether or not it's going to be one part or two, whether I'm going to interrupt you in order to insert breaks, or if I'm going to do that work myself after, and like all this stuff. So I'm only slightly present. Mm-hmm. And I have to actually focus to take in what my person is saying so that I can respond right with myself, not just with this checklist. Because otherwise the show kind of sucks, right? you have to be present like this. Yeah. So I want to thank you for bringing that, because I am terrible at remembering to ground myself when I have a checklist, right?
No, thank you. Because this is a two-way interaction. If I showed up present and you didn't, I couldn't like fall into this groove with you either. It depends on both of us showing up fully and opening up this channel of space between us to remain in it. And we started talking about going slow and how that will actually make you more aware of yourself in various ways. But also, it will just enrich everything you're doing. We made the distinction between kind of this vertical intensity, where it's about like how harsh or vibrant your environment is, versus this horizontal intensity, which is more about how present you are in it and how much of you is receiving the experience. And ultimately, that's what slowing down does. It helps you really receive the experience, because more of you is here. You're not just this floating brain that's just racing through whatever's happening. And
where subspace happens. And it's why it scares people who have never felt that present before.
Right. And I did want to go back to that, actually, because you were talking about the difference between the, you know, being on the receiving end of the experience and then how there's like top space that people talk about. And of course, there are going to be different experiences. Of course, because one is receiving and one is giving. So one is about like your being. It's about who you are in the moment rather than what you're doing, which is more of like a cerebral process, because you do have to like have a bit of that planning going in the back of your mind, like the pace and, you know, paying attention to the other person's cues. So it's a very doing process. And the receiving process is fundamentally different, especially considering that in our culture, doing is revered and being and receiving is looked down upon in many, many ways. So a lot of us are actually deeply uncomfortable with receiving, because it often comes with guilt and shame and indebtedness and allowing ourselves. Yeah. And allowing ourselves to actually receive without guilt is a trip. That's literally currently where I'm at in my kink journey, is learning how to receive more without needing to immediately reciprocate or needing to, you know, perform in the way I receive, you know, so that I'm not like maximizing their perceived pleasure that I'm receiving from them, if that makes sense, like increasing the moans or, you know, like twisting and whatever. But no, like actually just being here and receiving it and trusting that receiving an experience is its own experience. It's not secondary and it's not incomplete. Yeah. So the first point, actionable point, was slowing it down. And the second thing is tracking. So we've already talked about some tracking, which in somatic experiencing would be like literally noticing your body's cues and then responding to them in the right ways.
I want you to expand, if you can, on the paying attention to the responses that your body gives and what kind of messaging it's trying to give you. Because I mean, I was soaking up everything he said, but now my brain's got all these questions, right? So like, how do you suggest people work past that resistance? Because we spend our entire lives being told that the information we're getting from our body isn't real.
Yeah.
Right? Like that those boundaries aren't as valid as the person intruding on them and their perspective. And like from getting your diaper changed when you're screaming no, you know, to being an adult in a relationship. And if you're in a typical relationship, it does involve a lot of boundary crashing because we're not taught how to respect each other sexually and intimately or even emotionally. So, you know, there's a lot of guilt that comes with listening to your body, a lot of shame that comes with listening to your body, and a lot of fear too, because if you don't assert your boundaries, then you don't have to acknowledge they're being violated, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There are like thousands of things you can do, but you obviously would want to start with something that is most safe. And often what is most safe is external. So if you're just learning how to track your body and wanting to become aware of its different signs and cues, I would suggest starting with something that you know you like. Either it's a dish or a song or a smell. I love the smell of coconuts. I can't get enough of it. I have like candles and coconut oil and all of my hair products are coconut, like everything. And I know for a fact that I like the smell. And there's got to be a handful of things that you have that activate your various senses that you know you find pleasant, you know, your favorite blanket, your favorite sweatpants, whatever it is. And I would recommend interacting with that thing and noticing how you know that you like it. Like, what tells you that you like it? For me, for example, like my cozy duvet, I really, really love it. It's extra warm and it's got a lot of like puff to it. So when I'm in it, I just feel so cozy and warm. I know I like it because I can let my body go. Like I can fully relax and I know that I'm enveloped in the exact warmth I want and the exact texture I want. And I feel like I don't have to be quote unquote on. There's like this relief and a relaxation that comes over me. My body feels more heavy. My arms feel more limp and my mind kind of can soften. I don't have to like anticipate what I'm going to do next with this blanket. Like just being under it is complete. And so interact with the things you love and just notice like, when I smell the smell of coconut, there's like this invigoration that happens in my body. That's like a expansion in my rib cage. I want to take deeper breaths because my breaths smell really good. There's like I usually will like smile a bit, you know, and I like to close my eyes so I can really focus on the sense of smell. And that's how you start tracking, is noticing how you know that you like certain things. Because we often will focus on like the threatening things, you know, like a lot of the dating advice and kink advice also is, you know, really be really clear about what you don't want, like your, you know, hard nose and your hard limits. And sure, that's important. But I think a lot of us then learn how to say no, but don't really learn how to say yes. And embodiment is all about the yes.
Oh my God, I love you.
You know, and so when you start with the things you love, that resistance isn't there because you already know you love them. There's no discovery. The stakes are low and non-existent. There's no, like, if you get it wrong, nobody's gonna, like, you know, kick through your door and blame you for it. It's fine. You're just noticing how you know you like them.
And when we focus on what we do want and what our partner wants, if it's a mutual, like if it's a partnered experience, then there's no room for predatory behavior, right? Mm-hmm. When we go, okay, I don't want this, this, and this, then there always seems to be that, well, you didn't mention this.
Yeah, there's always a loophole.
That's exactly it. When we talk about negotiating for intimacy, we're talking about finding the green lights, not, you know, because you should be watching your partner and the reactions and the sounds they're making to notice when it goes yellow. Mm-hmm. When you're hitting a spot that's not comfortable for them, we're supposed to be there with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because often, like you're talking about, when we're receiving sensation, like even recognizing when things are really intense, like being able to recognize, like, am I okay right now?
Mm-hmm.
Is this good? Is this bad? Like, it's so much sensation in my body's like, I feel things. Yay. Right. And it can be hard to recognize if that's actually getting dangerous for us or not. And whether that's emotional or physical or psychological danger, it's all the same. Like, mm-hmm. our brain doesn't go, oh, well, this is a physical sensation. It doesn't do that. Like, that's your frontal lobe that's doing that. That's a totally different process. And so, yeah, like, we have to be able to say yes. Mm-hmm. And in order to say yes, we need to know what works for us.
Yeah. And I think so, a lot of us,
yeah, go on. I'm loving it, because it ties in so much to the whole sex positive topic of, you need to know what your body likes, like not just what causes mm-hmm. you orgasms, but what is your body like? Because mm-hmm. that is solid communication.
And that is tracking. Like, it's essential. It's you tracking your body. Yeah. And tracking is just literally just knowing how your body speaks to you. What are the cues that it gives you about what it wants and doesn't want? And so if you're just in the beginning of this process, like I said, it's really easy to start with something external and pleasant, because stakes are low and it's a great experience. And then you notice, or, you know, next time you like really sink into your couch and you're cozy, just bring it up for a second in your mind. Be like, how do I know I'm cozy? Is it because I'm like leaning in? Is it because my lower back is supported in a certain way? What tells me that I'm cozy right now?
So this is like mindfulness 101. Yeah.
Yeah. Without all of the, like, you know, having to meditate for hours and being in the same seated position, it's just presence. It's just mindfulness. It's just you being here with you. Because remember from our last talk, presence is when your mind and your body are in the same place. And so tracking is inherent in presence. So here you are, your mind and your body are here, and your mind gets to learn, okay, body, here we are. And how is this for you? Do you enjoy this chair or this couch? Or, you know, would you rather have a pillow behind your back or sit in a different way? And that's tracking. Slowly, once you have more and more of that kind of experience, when you start just getting kind of like developing the muscle of looking inward and noticing how you feel, then you'll be naturally more aware of some other things. You'll be somewhere, or like, say, I'm a very minimalistic person, and I have a very small range of shirts and pants, and all of my friends always make fun of me for that, because I always wear the same things. And I have to have my things feel a certain way, because I don't want to feel like my behavior is modified by my clothes, or that I have to like act a certain way because I'm wearing a certain thing. So me going shopping is a stupid process, because it takes forever, because like the vibe of the thing has to suit me. So when I put it on, I feel still fully me. And you'll start noticing that kind of thing, you know, like you'll put on a t-shirt and all of a sudden you're like, actually, this isn't all that comfortable for me. And then you go, why? How do I know it's uncomfortable? Is it because my shoulders kind of tighten up? Is it because, you know, like the texture, the way it feels against my skin isn't quite as soft as I want it to be? And these are, notice, pay attention to the fact that all the things I'm noticing or naming are very low stakes things. So you're not like, body, tell me why I hate my partner when they're doing this. No. Like, don't go that far. Pick things that are low stakes and easy to navigate. And eventually it will grow into this process where, you know, you'll be having a conversation and all of a sudden you're like, they seem like a pleasant person, but my body feels like it's pulling away. Like, I want to lean back in my chair, and not in a way that I lean back into my sofa. I lean back kind of to distance myself from them, and I don't know why. And you sometimes might never know why. You might even find out. But then you'll start noticing, because you're developing this muscle of like checking in with your body of how this would feel. And then you're like, well, I guess my body says no. I don't know what it's about, but I'm going to trust it, because I'm not about to overpower my body for you. Like, no, that's not about to happen.
I just want to speak to something that can come up for people who aren't used to having that kind of mindfulness. Because I know when I started healing from trauma, you get more and more in your body as you heal. It's like you get mm-hmm. more and more in your body, which helps you heal. But it's like a nice little cycle that just one feeds the other. Mm-hmm. And we were at an event and this person was talking to me a lot. And I said to my partner, I can't tell if I'm repulsed by him or attracted to him, you know, because I was at that stage where I'm starting to become aware that my body's having a reaction, but not at the stage where I can recognize what the message is. And like that kind of thing really opened me to exploring some of the messages we have about what is attractive. Right. If you know, romances, like society, movies, everything teaches us that ickiness that a person can send to our psyche that we recognize subconsciously, right? Our body will alert us to it, but we are actually taught that that might be attraction.
Yeah.
Right. Because you feel something. So obviously it's going to be a good thing, right? Because we're not allowed to dislike people, especially not people showing an interest in us. Right.
Totally. Yeah.
And he turned out to be a predatory sort of person. So like just verbalizing that to someone that I don't know what this message means helped me, one, to pay more attention to my body. And two, it allowed the part of my brain that doesn't usually tell me messages to send messages about what I was noticing. So I picked up on all these little microaggressions that this person had, and I was able to go, oh, is that interesting? So I find boundary pushing might trigger a thought that I think I'm attracted to the person.
Huh. Yeah.
Right. That's, and then from there, I was able to have a healthier relationship with the messages my body was sending. Right.
Wow. That is so profound. You're right.
It was like a changing point in the way I perceive the messages that my body sends. Mm-hmm. So now when I get a strong message, I know to take time to not assume that that's a person I need to interact with. Like this might be a warning.
Yeah. And we kind of talked about this a bit last time where, you know, some things are unnecessarily coupled in our brains. And for myself personally, I had fear and love coupled just based on how I was raised. Because, you know, my parents also gave me a lot of messaging around like how, well, we're making you afraid of this because we love you, because that's what keeps you safe. And I used to pick partners subconsciously where I was always afraid for their well-being because they were self-destructive in some way or another, because I just had this pattern where fear comes with love and love comes with fear. And even though they weren't abusive towards me ever, the fear was still present. It just wasn't for my well-being, it was for their well-being. And I used to, and I still do love traveling, but then my bestie and I kind of sat down and talked about it because she also likes traveling. And when I was discovering that fear and love are coupled inside of me, and I was like, oh my God, I think that's also why I love traveling, because it is fearsome to be somewhere by yourself with no safety net, nobody you know, often in a place where they don't speak your language, but then I'm invigorated by it. And we started talking about all of these things, and it was funny because weeks prior to that, we did this exercise where we printed off a bunch of cards, and they were like value cards, and we were placing them into like important, not important, somewhat important. And both of us placed safety as not important at the time. And we kind of noticed that and we're like, huh, what's that about? Considering that safety is so fundamental. And it grew into this whole conversation about how we didn't get to allow ourselves safety throughout most of our lives because it wasn't an option. Like we couldn't choose to have safe parents. We couldn't choose to have safe, you know, schooling. Like I was bullied in school at some point. So safety was not a choice often. So I've learned to detach myself from how important I find safety. Mm-hmm. And so considering that in somatic experiencing, like safety is fundamental, like nothing happens if you don't feel safe. It was just a big eye opener for what we find attractive and pleasant. And as we talked about last time, Sometimes we recreate these traumatic patterns and they become familiar and they become attractive because they're familiar, because there's this like false safety that familiarity creates. It just, because it's predictable. You kind of know the outline of this interaction, and that makes it desirable because you're like, yeah, I've been on this roller coaster. I can take it again. It was thrilling when it was thrilling. When it was bad, but that's okay. I'll do the thing for the thrill because I'm learned to be attracted to it.
And so folks listening, like, stay tuned. There's going to be another piece to this discussion because it's just simply not done. Mm-hmm. Right. So to everybody listening, tune in again. This is Sex Talk.